This episode is brought to you by Oddmos Pizza in Canby. Handmade awesome pizza plus craft beer, cider, and wine delivered. Call them today at 503-266-8444.
This episode is also brought to you by the Canby Liquor Store. With their ever-growing selection of spirits, beers, and local wines, as well as some awesome gifts that you cannot find anywhere else, they're much more than your average liquor store. Find them in the Fred Meyer Shopping Center. Welcome to the Canby Now podcast.
Your source for news.
The threat of a possible teacher strike was avoided this week.
There's a new irresistibly cute creature winning over fans, and its name is Scootaloo.
Sports?
It's like Lucy in the football. You want to kick a field goal, but they take it away from you.
We had to learn how to win.
Goal can't be in the last second of the game!
And interesting conversations.
Because I'm one of the strongest girls ever, and I know that for a fact.
I just really enjoy writing gossip as if I was a bear.
With an old maid daughter that make the best moonshine in the coast.
If it would have hit me in the face, I think I would have died. I really do.
I guarantee you would have died, man. Are you kidding me?
It's official. Coronavirus has arrived in Oregon. At least, we're pretty sure. The Oregon Health Authority announced on Friday that the state's first preemptive case of the sometimes deadly disease known as novel coronavirus, COVID-19, has been discovered in an Oregon resident. The individual, a Washington County resident who has not been identified but has been confirmed to be an employee at Forest Hills Elementary School in Lake Oswego, tested positive at a local lab in Hillsboro, but is considered presumptive until the results are verified by the CDC at their facilities. Though coronavirus itself is only presumed to have reached the state, the panic caused by the disease is certainly here. Grocery stores were busy all weekend with folks stocking their fallout shelters and doomsday bunkers. And if you were looking for hand sanitizer, forget it. Stores were reportedly sold out throughout the county. Forest Hills will be closed until March 4th to allow public health officials to complete their investigation, including contacting employees there and family of children to inform them of their exposure and let them know the next steps. The individual has been isolated and is being cared for at Kaiser Permanente Westside Medical Center in Hillsboro. The case sparked concern because the individual had not traveled to a country where the virus was circulating and is not believed to have had close contact with another confirmed case. As such, public health officials are considering it a community transmitted case, meaning that the origin of the infection is unknown. In a statement this weekend, Superintendent Trip Goodall said the Canby School District is working closely with Clackamas County's Public Health Division. Whether it's the flu, COVID-19, or even the common cold, our district takes regular health and safety precautions to prevent the spread of viruses, he said in an email to district families. In the event of any sort of health emergency, Canby School District would work with local public health leaders to ensure the safety of our students and staff. But the coronavirus outbreak had already made its presence felt in Canby several weeks earlier when Baker Prairie Middle School officials canceled students' annual trip to South Korea, one of the hardest hit countries. The trip had been planned for March 13th through the 25th to visit BPM's two sister schools, Anam Middle School in Changwon and Gangbuk Middle School in Daeguk. BPM's administrators informed students and families of what they described as the difficult decision at a meeting on February 10th. It was, as expected, heartbreaking for the students and their families, according to a February 11th email that was sent to middle school staff. This is the first time in the 12-year history of BPM's Korean Studies program that a trip to South Korea has been canceled. Coronavirus is most dangerous for seniors and those with underlying medical conditions. The vast majority of the cases are mild. The virus is thought to be spread from person to person when in close contact, and officials recommend frequent hand washing with soap and water or an alcohol-based sanitizer, if you can find any, and to maintain at least 3 feet of distance from anyone who is coughing or sneezing. The state's announcement comes amid growing numbers of cases around the world and in the United States. More than 80,000 people have been infected worldwide, and about 3,000 have died, most of them in China, where the epidemic started. They also announced recently that the first case of coronavirus in neighboring Washington state also, sadly, became the first person to die of the virus in the U.S. He reportedly was a man in his 50s with underlying health conditions and, like the Oregon case, was not believed to have contracted the virus through travel. The Canby School Board agreed unanimously Wednesday night to place a 20-year-old $75 million bond issue before district voters in the upcoming May 2020 primary election. The vote followed a brief discussion by the board, in which much praise was heaped upon staff and the Community Bond Development Committee, who have put in countless hours over the past 3 months to ensure the board's decision could be handled as smoothly and easily as it was. The bond proposal was designed to extend but not raise taxes by replacing the current bond payments that built Baker Prairie Middle School 15 years ago. Those payments are set to expire at the end of this year. This package would be aimed at improving school facilities and addressing deferred maintenance projects, as well as expanding opportunities for hands-on learning and upgrading school safety and security. Specific projects would include replacing the existing 200 wing science classrooms and lab spaces at Canby High School, replacing HVAC systems and repairing school roofs, district-wide ADA improvements, numerous technological upgrades and improvements, and several high-need fire safety projects, including two fire suppression doors at Knight Elementary and the wiring of an existing set of fire suppression doors at Lee Elementary to the main office's lockdown system. Fire safety dominated the brief discussion on Wednesday, with some feeling that the proposed package did not go far enough. Dawn Deppner, a member of the district's board of directors, said her biggest concern is Karis Elementary School, a rural school located well outside the city on Cascade Highway, but which is served by the Canby School District. "One thing that I don't like about all this is that Karis doesn't even have a fire hydrant, and they have no sprinklers," she said. "It's a big concern for me. I did call and had a brief conversation with the fire chief today regarding that, but I do think it's something that needs to be addressed." Director Tom Scott said that while he agrees with some of the concerns on the fire safety front, he believed the board should follow the lead of the Bond Development Committee. "I think we have a lot of faith in the committee that represented our community, so I would urge us to follow their recommendation," Director Scott said. "I don't think that we have any reason to doubt their recommendations. The fire safety stuff is important, but they looked at it all a lot harder than we have." He pointed out the package also includes an estimated $7.5 million in contingency funds, which may offer opportunities to address other fire safety needs down the road. If the bond proposal is approved in May, it would also bring in an additional $4.7 million from the state's Oregon School Capital Improvement Matching Program in the form of a grant that was awarded to Canby School District. If the bond fails to pass, the district would have to reapply for these funds, and there's no guarantee that they would receive them again. If approved, a citizen oversight committee would be established to ensure bonds funds were used for the intended purpose laid out in the bond package. The bond funds would mature over a period of 20 years from the date they are issued. Canby residents will have an opportunity to learn more about the quality of their drinking water and express their concerns at a public presentation and listening session by Clackamas Soil and Water Conservation District at 6 p.m. Tuesday at Cutsforth's Town Hall. The district was awarded a National Water Quality Initiative grant from the Natural Resources Conservation Service to assess factors affecting drinking water source quality in the Canby area, launching what they are now calling the Mooloolah River Drinking Water Project. The project is an effort to better understand issues affecting drinking water quality for approximately 26,000 people whose drinking water is drawn directly from the Mullalo River. Project sponsors are now seeking input from members of the public about their perceptions of drinking water source quality and issues of concern. While the project focuses on water entering municipal intakes in the cities of Cambie, Mullalo, and Colton, it assesses factors across the entire Mullalo River watershed that have potential of impacting drinking water source quality. Clackamas SWCD has hired a consultant to conduct the bulk of the research and technical work regarding the Mullalo River assessment. John Runnan of Cascade Environmental Group and his scientific team are working closely with local, state, and regional agencies to gain an understanding of the issues that affect the local drinking water quality. They are also pairing current and historic technical information with input from the public and land managers, agencies, and community organizations to tell the story of drinking water source quality in the Mullalo watershed. The final report will describe where investment of resources will bring the biggest return for drinking water source quality protection and improvement. Members of the public are invited to hear a short presentation about the project, after which individuals will be able to provide input. In order to ensure that they have enough space for those interested in attending, project managers ask that you please RSVP by phone at 503-210-6000. So that's 6,000. If they run out of space, they will hold a second meeting in Cambie. For more information on the Mullalo River Drinking Water Project, visit MullaloRiverDrinkingWater.com. It was a quiet week in the state capitol building as the Republican caucuses in both chambers continued their walkout in protest over the state's latest cap-and-trade proposal and what they describe as the Democratic supermajority's partisan tactics. But though there was little said on the House or Senate floor, much ink was spilled in press releases and prepared statements that parties or individual elected officials fired at each other throughout the week. On Thursday, House Democrats announced that they had voted to issue civil subpoenas to the, quote, absent and unexcused members of the House Republican caucus, requiring those members to appear before the committee by Thursday of this week to explain their absences. Representative Paul Hulvey, an Eugene Democrat and chair of House Committee on Rules, admitted the tactic was an extraordinary measure. He said, quote, "This is an extraordinary measure brought on by the extraordinary actions of the House Republican caucus. We all took an oath to support the Oregon Constitution and faithfully discharge the duties of our House, which require our attendance when the legislature is in session. As I see it, House Republicans are currently in violation of that oath. These Republican legislators owe the people of Oregon an explanation for their absences." End quote. Oregon law authorizes the chair of legislative committee, upon a majority vote, to issue civil subpoenas, in other words, to compel the attendance of witnesses before a committee. Earlier that day on the House floor, Representative Hulvey asked House Speaker Tina Kotek whether or not she had been in communication with absentee Republicans. The speaker said that she had contacted every member of the Republican caucus asking them to return to work, but had received no commitments. Some responses directed her to House Republican leader Christine Drazen, state representative from Cambie. Drazen responded in a release of her own on Thursday, calling it, quote, "just the latest example of the majority party's strong-arm tactics designed to end negotiations. We will not be intimidated," she said. "We remain resolved to serve the hardworking families of Oregon who have asked for the abuse of power to end and for a cap and trade to be referred to the people." On today's Cambie Conversation with leaders of the Aurora Fire District, you'll hear several references to last week's serious injury crash on Hubbard Cutoff Road, also known as Highway 551. We have a little more information to share about the crash, courtesy of the preliminary report from the Oregon State Police. The crash occurred at approximately 7:22 a.m. on Monday, February 24th. According to the preliminary investigation, it was caused by 54-year-old Scott Harrison Vosburgh of Woodburn, who crossed into the opposite lane and struck a Kenworth dump truck nearly head-on. It took Aurora firefighters 32 minutes to extract Vosburgh, after which he was transported to Legacy Emmanuel Medical Center by Life Flight helicopter. It was later determined that Vosburgh's injuries were not life-threatening. The driver of the Kenworth, 60-year-old William Edward Norman, was transported to Salem Hospital for evaluation after complaining of pain. Vosburgh's GMC Yukon was nearly destroyed, and the Kenworth also sustained heavy damage. Both were towed from the scene. Some of the debris impacted a northbound Mercedes-Benz S500, causing minor damage. The highway was closed for several hours while Oregon State Police investigated. Hazmat also responded to spilled diesel fuel. Canby Now Sports is brought to you by Reif & Hunsaker PC. When you need an attorney, turn to the firm that Canby has trusted for over 50 years. Call them today at 503-266-3456.
It's a shorter sports report this week than you might be used to, Cougar fans, as the winter season is just about wrapped up. Hey, speaking of wrapped up, this weekend was a highlight in the careers of many a young grappler. The OSAA State Wrestling Championships at Veterans Memorial Coliseum in Portland. The Canby wrestling team sent an incredible 9 athletes to state this year, including Logan Doman, who finished second in his weight class at the league championships 2 weeks ago, and Three Rivers League champion, Kaden McMullen. The Cougar wrestlers have been preparing for this moment all season, and they came in ready to make some noise. Ethan Ensrud, Caden Boyd, and Doman won their first championship round matches by fall. Asher Chafee took his first by decision, while Dominic Netter won his by major decision. Doman made it the furthest this year, falling by 3-round decision in the quarterfinals to Forest Grove's Gavin Rice. Also competing at state this year were Nick Marquez, Brent Patterson, and Juan Vargas. Congratulations to Canby's boys and girls wrestling teams on a fantastic season. Still up this winter is, of course, March Madness. Wait, who said anything about college ball? We're talking high school hoops. And both of Canby's teams will have their chance in the big dance. The girls wrapped up their season in fine fashion with 2 impressive wins. Lake Oswego has had a tough season this year, failing to win a single league game. And that didn't change against Canby on Wednesday, despite being at home. The Cougs won easily on the road, 46-21. Their final regular season match would be tougher as they faced St. Mary's Academy, who was neck and neck with Canby in the standings and looking to duke it out for the best playoff position. It came down to the wire, but the Cougs pulled it off at the nail biter, 61-60 on senior night. 2 wins in the final week virtually guaranteed Canby a home playoff opener. And that's what happened. The powers that be slotted the Cougs in at the number 13 seed. They'll host 20th ranked Jesuit on Tuesday with a tip-off time of 6:30. The boys have a tough draw in their playoff bracket, but that's what you expect when you're the 28th seed in a field of 32. They'll face number 5 Central Catholic, who went 17-7 this year. They're fresh off an absolute beatdown of the Centennial Eagles, whom they stomped 77-21 to close out their regular season. We're hoping for a big upset, of course, and these Cougs have shown themselves capable of going toe-to-toe with just about anybody. But if we can't bring home the W, at least let us not lose by 50. Tip-off is at 7 p.m. Wednesday.
The Canby Now podcast is brought to you in part by DirectLink, where technology meets tradition. Canby's longest-running and most innovative communications provider for over 116 years, DirectLink has worked hard to bring quality services to the area at affordable prices. From establishing phone lines in the early 1900s to being the first gigabit internet speed provider in Oregon, DirectLink paves the way for new technology so our neighbors can stay connected. Visit them online at directlink.coop to learn more about their communication services and community activities.
We'd like to extend our undying gratitude to Canby Now Plus member Ursula Kuhn. We rely on your monthly contributions to continue to do this work that we love. To find out how you can become one of the coolest people in the world, one of our supporters on Patreon, visit canbynowpod.com/plus. There's no question that the interstates and rural highways surrounding and running through Canby can be dangerous, even deadly. It seems we can't go a week without the news of yet another horrific crash happening in our backyards. But why are they happening? Can we do anything to prevent them? And what of the impact on firefighters, EMTs, police, and other first responders who see these grisly scenes up close and personal in a way that we, the public, don't? On the Canby Conversation today, we'll be discussing these and other questions with the leadership of the Aurora Fire District.
I know Chief Williams of the Aurora Fire District, Joshua Williams. Would you introduce yourself?
Yeah, I'm Lieutenant Bill Hansen.
Cool. I don't know how accurate it is because I think we do tend to like misremember things either right. Like better or worse. But you have been talking, like, it seems like the accidents and the serious accidents have gotten worse lately over the past couple of years on some of these rural roads. I don't know if you guys feel the same way or if maybe we just see them more with social media and whatnot, but... Yeah.
I think it's probably a mix of both.
Yeah.
Where everybody is a reporter, right? I mean, everybody has their cell phones out. We see it all the time when we're at these accidents where people are driving by and they've got their phones hanging out their windows trying
being
to record
unsafe.
Things so they,
yeah.
so they can put it on Facebook.
Right.
So I think it's a combination of both. There's certainly been a big rash of accidents lately.
Yeah.
And we've had some really serious ones.
Yeah.
But also just the amount of people that are reporting these things have certainly increased as well.
Yeah,
both. And then with that comes just a lot of speculation and misinformation
as to what's causing it.
As to what's causing it, right. Yeah, especially in a small community like ours where we have to...
No one ever talks or gossips.
They don't ever
anything.
Talk,
yeah.
no, and yeah. none of us have family vehicles that look like the ones that are in the accidents, those sorts of things.
Yeah.
So it certainly is a challenge.
Yeah, we have been getting that in here from people, you know, why are you posting these pictures and whatnot. My take, and I don't know if you guys feel the same way, is, you know, I feel for the victims and whatnot. I totally hear what people are saying who are upset by seeing the pictures, you know, but to me, like, it tells the story better than just there was an accident, you know, or there was
right.
an injury accident. And it tells the real impact of what, and a lot of times before, I mean, there really are no quote unquote accidents, right? It tells the impact of unsafe behaviors, you know, hopefully if even one person sees a really bad crash picture, and they put their cell phone away or they call an Uber, you know, I think that that's worth it, even if it does upset some people.
Well, we're very careful about when we release photos.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there are many times where we do it on scene. Those are a lot of times fairly minor calls. We're very careful about when we have major accidents, especially anything that may involve a fatality, that there's no photos that are identifying. You know, we try not to put plates out there, and certainly, of course, no pictures of anybody.
Right.
Again, in this day and age where everybody has a camera,
yeah.
It's out there.
Right.
And so, you know, we'd rather... you know, we feel the same way you do, where we'd rather help tell that story and hopefully cause somebody to think next time,
right.
you know, when they're driving with their cell phone trying to text.
Right. It's not about like, oh, this is a cool picture or
right.
anything like that.
No, these are really devastating accidents and, you know, they affect people and we see it every day. And so, you know, we're not doing it because it's a cool thing. It's just, it is one of the things that we have to deal with and people need to be aware that, you know, your actions have consequences and that these are some of the things that can happen.
Yeah. Well, that brings up something I do want to ask you about, maybe hear from Lieutenant Hansen as well. Just what I think something that people forget, the impact on the first responders that have to see this. I mean, if you are impacted from seeing a picture on Facebook, imagine the folks that are driving up to this, you know, having to save lives, cut open that vehicle
mm-hmm.
that was so damaged that you see or whatever. Can you tell us a little bit about what that's like for you guys and the folks that respond?
Yeah, it's obviously difficult to have to deal with that. We're trained to deal with it on scene. We kind of go into a work mode and we get that incident taken care of the best we can.
Yeah.
But afterwards,
you're human, right?
Afterwards, yeah. You're in the truck and you're talking about it and you start thinking about it a little bit more. Mm-hmm. You start finding relations like, well, you know, what if this was my family member? And the things that that person is dealing with afterwards, they've got a long haul.
Yeah.
We always try to follow up, see how our patients are doing in the hospital, if possible. A lot of times we don't get that with a lot of the laws and everything. We just get that they're still alive, but we don't know how they're doing.
Right. Yeah. No, I hear you. We get that too. Yeah. Their condition is fair and that's all they need.
Yeah. Right. Exactly. And yeah, we don't even get very much information out of it either. But we do have a great support system with all of our fellow firefighters. We have a chaplain that's awesome, able to talk to them and actually talk about what we're feeling and how we're dealing with those issues afterwards.
Yeah.
But it can be hard at times.
Yeah.
Nobody wants to see that.
Yeah. And just, I mean, can't emphasize enough, but like the photos that we see, you know, as bad as they can be, are the pre-approved, sanitized versions, no victims, no, you know, the things that you feel tell the story without, you know, going too far or crossing any lines.
Right.
You guys see everything.
Right.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, for the person looking at the picture, you know, we are looking at the picture, but we're also smelling the smells and hearing the screams and the sounds and the traffic and the tools. And so it's a whole different experience on scene. But as Lieutenant indicated, when we get on scene, we are in complete work mode. But again, when we get back to the station, we're humans that have to look at this stuff. You know, all of our families travel on these roads.
You still have those memories. You still hear those screams.
Yeah, I mean, we all have memories from, you know, 20 years ago. You know, these things just never go away. They just keep piling up. But when we get on these scenes, you know, it's all about working for that patient.
Lieutenant, back to kind of the support network. What does that look like? You mentioned that for folks that, you know, might need it or might just need to decompress or process some of the things that they see. What does that look like?
Well, it kind of starts with just getting back into the fire engine and on the ride back to the fire station, we start talking to each other.
Is that based on kind of the command hierarchy, like, or just same just level or
brothers and sisters talking, just kind of talking about what we saw, what we dealt with. Usually it's talking about what went well, what we could work on. To improve those types of things, and also just anything that might have stood out that we wanted to talk about. A little bit further on, we actually set up a date to where we'll talk about the incident and have a debriefing with our chaplain. And we're actually starting.
So there's some intentionality there, you know. Okay. Follow up. That's good.
Yep. Chaplain's been trained on talking with their first responders and helping us through anything we might be dealing with, if there is that. And then. Also, we have a peer support group that is starting in the area.
Oh, okay. And is that based on different agencies?
It's multiple agencies working together. So you have a peer support person you can go to and talk to if you need to. And sometimes it's just someone you're more comfortable with.
Yeah.
Lieutenant Gloy is actually working on some of the peer support stuff right now.
Yeah, way down there in the corner with his princess cup.
Yes. It's been a group effort to get the peer support program going. Canby Fire has kind of spearheaded it. And it's with Canby Fire, Molalla, Woodburn, and us that I know of for sure, that we pool our resources because, you know, you might not always want to talk to who you're working with about the stuff that's going through your head. You might want someone that's a little more neutral. So I could call Canby Fire and say, hey,
sure. Yeah. I'm good. You know, you kind of put that facade up,
but I could call Canby Fire and say, I've got someone who's really jammed up having a bad day. They want to talk to somebody, but they don't want to talk to anybody here. And they can be like, hey, yeah, we've got someone on the team that could meet with them and talk with them. And it's kind of, it keeps it, you know, separate from your work. So you're not talking about all your dirty laundry or your issues with someone you work with. So it works out pretty good.
Sure. And you said that's peer support. So it's firefighters talking to firefighters.
Correct.
It's not, you know, therapists or mental health professionals or even chaplains or whatnot.
It starts with firefighter to firefighter. But through that, we also have employee assistance program that we have have more resources. So if that person's really jammed up beyond what I can talk to them about, I can help refer them to where they need to go. And those counselors and stuff that they have through that EAP are specially trained for emergency responders. So it's not your normal psychologist that you go to for stuff, because some of the things that we see and deal with we go to a normal psychiatrist or counselor and they're like, whoa, that's really bad. I don't know. Sometimes they're traumatized from that stuff that we tell them about.
But yeah, I get it.
Yeah. There's been plenty of stories where they go and talk and the counselor's like, wow, how are you doing this? You need to stop. And it's like, well, that's not what we're looking for here. We need to navigate through this. So, but yeah, it's been a good system that that's going. So, it's got a lot of support from the fire chiefs and the people involved. So I see good things for the future for everybody.
Great. And what was your name?
Tim Gloy.
Tim Gloy. And
Lieutenant here. Yeah.
And what's with the Princess Cup?
Nobody else will take my coffee cup. I always know which one's mine.
Very nice. I believe it. So we've got this heat map here of different accidents. You want to speak to that,
Chief? Yeah, I just was showing you a map of in 2019 where our traffic accidents were district-wide.
Yeah.
We responded on approximately 200 car accidents in 2019.
That's crazy.
It is. It's a lot. Considering that's about 20% of the calls that Aurora Fire responds to.
That's more than every other day.
It is. It's a significant amount. And as you can see, I-5 is quite the hot spot for us, as well as 551 Ellen Road.
These two particular areas where I guess there's exits, you have the three big exits around the Wilsonville area, which makes sense. And then is that
278?
Donald Aurora? Yeah.
278, yep. And then up towards the rest area, and then just various points along I-5. We essentially cover from the Boone Bridge down to the truck scales at Woodburn. It's a pretty significant stretch of Interstate 5.
Yeah.
Heading over towards Donald, out towards Butteville, and Ellen Road.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Chief Dyke, of course, has been here for over 20-something years.
Right. And so, at the other end of the table, refusing to be on the podcast. Yeah,
so he's seen a progression of accidents, and maybe he could speak to that a little bit.
He said you have to talk.
Yes. When I first started, we had 384 calls a year.
Mm-hmm.
And now we're up to 1,045.
And a lot of those would be medical as well? Or
yeah, medical.
Yeah.
And car wrecks. Not so many fires.
Yeah. And now how many are you? Sorry.
Four.
How many calls now?
1,045, 1,100, right in there.
Yeah. So, and what was the time frame? I don't want to age you, but you said when you started, it was about
386.
Yeah. Okay.
So now we're up to 2020 and our calls are way up there.
Yeah. Yeah. So the car wrecks, do you feel like they've gotten worse recently or?
I think the speeds have increased.
Yeah. Which would lead to more serious.
Correct. Injuries. More people on the road, more chances of accidents because
mm-hmm. more distractions.
Yeah. And nobody wants to stop for a red light.
Mm-hmm.
Any intersection you can see cars whizzing through the red to get home.
I know that you guys you're the responders, you're not sort of the policy makers or anything like that, but from what you see and the experiences that you do have, which is substantial, of kind of seeing the end result of what's out there for policy, what do you think would help, or what advice can you maybe give to folks that are see some of these accidents? And like, I've even heard people say, like, I'm scared to drive on some of these roads now, you know?
I think the biggest piece of advice that I would probably give is to just pay attention.
Mm-hmm.
I think that it's so easy for all of us to get into a routine where maybe we're going from Aurora to Portland to work.
Oh, I do. And I'm supposed to go to Donald or whatever. Right. And my wife's like, where are you going? Like,
and you just kind of zone out.
Yeah.
We just zone out and we're just driving because we do it every day.
Mm-hmm.
We're really not paying attention. We got our hand on the steering wheel. We're just going.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the awareness is really falling behind. I think that's really the biggest key is to really pay attention because things can change just in an instant. It just takes one vehicle to swerve across that yellow line to hit you right head on.
Yeah.
So
I think we've all had those experiences of those near misses where fortunately you were paying attention and were able to avoid an accident that otherwise would have been quite serious. So.
And cell phones, texting, those sorts of things.
Yeah.
We have a lot of hands-free devices and computers in the cars now, which those really aren't too hands-free because you're now, instead of on your computer, you're touching your dash and doing these things. And that is certainly a distraction.
Yeah.
So speed and really just distraction, everyday items.
Yeah.
leave yourself plenty of time to get to where you're going. Don't be in a hurry. Make sure you get up a little bit earlier if you can. I know a lot of people probably are in a rush to get to work or beat that traffic, and that just gets them to make poor choices trying to get to where they're going.
Aurora Fire just purchased some new rescue tools, which people would know as the Jaws of Life. The last time that we purchased brand new tools was back in 1980.
Wow.
So
even before Chief Dyke's Day.
Even before Chief Dyke's Day, yeah. So since then, we've purchased a couple used tools, but so now we've done a major upgrade because we have so many car accidents. And really, the metals and you know, the construction of vehicles have changed so much that we really needed to do an upgrade because our tools were getting to the point where they weren't powerful enough to cut some of the modern metals and the alloys that we have on the roads today.
I always thought that the, you know, I kind of hear people gripe like that the metals were getting weaker or like cheaper. Is that not the case?
They're softer, they're lighter, but they're stronger. Yes. You know, cars are really well built, and being on our end, it's really amazing, you know, that the survivability of some of the calls that we see is really amazing. And you just wouldn't think that somebody could survive an accident like this, but the cars are so well made.
Monday I felt was like that. I was like, I can't believe that
it was.
That wasn't a fatal one. So this was this past Monday when we're recording this, the SUV versus dump truck.
Yes.
Yeah, on the Hubbard cutoff.
You know, when we as responders hear a head-on collision of a dump truck versus SUV, you know, we've instantly painted a picture in our mind, and it's not pleasant. And when we got there, you know, the vision that we had was presented to us. And that was a difficult call. We performed extrication for 32 minutes on that call. But the patient was conscious actually unconscious, but alive when we got there. He was still alive when he left. And it sounds like that he's progressing through his treatment. So, but he was life-led from the scene.
What is the protocol, or how does it work when you arrive on a scene and you determine, okay, you know, what tools we need to use, or how do we get the patients out into the care that they need? How does that all work?
Our fire engines are like a giant toolbox, and we've got so many different types of calls that
love to show them off. I've seen.
Oh yeah. Yep. Absolutely. We love giving tours. So please stop by if you're interested. So we do have what we call our traffic accident compartment, and it has all of our extrication tools. It has all of our traffic management items, such as cones, wands, signs, things like that. But when you arrive on a call like that, you know that you're going to be getting to work, and you know you're going to have to basically remove the car from around your patient. So you get the tools out, you get them prepared and ready to go, and you start directing your firefighters to get to work and start cutting posts, start removing doors. You may have to roll the dash off of a person if it's a head-on collision. So you use the tools that you need to get the job done.
I'm just trying to picture, like, how do you even, when you arrive on the scene, because we usually see the pictures after it's all done, and, you know, the roof's been taken off or whatever, but how do you sort of make a plan, okay, we're going to remove this piece or do that? Is it just experience and training that goes into it, or?
Yeah, we definitely do a lot of training. The tow yards in the area have been great to us about giving us cars to be able to work with and cut up. So some of them are wrecked. Some of them are just abandoned vehicles that they're going to scrap anyways. And so they allow us to either go out there or they'll drop them off. Or sometimes people will donate vehicles to us to be able to work with and practice on. And a lot of times we're getting the basics done. Every vehicle is different when it gets in a motor vehicle accident. And plus, there's so many different vehicles. So there are different challenges that we run into to try to open up the vehicle to get the person out safely. And that's where a lot of experience comes into play, and a lot of training and a lot of research into all the different vehicles that are out there.
Interesting. I know that you also wanted to talk about kind of some of the equipment that you guys use. You want to actually go look at some of that?
Absolutely.
We're going to take a quick break, and then we'll be back with a close-up look at the tools local firefighters use to manage wrecks and save lives.
I'm here with Derek Hill at Advantage Mortgage, and you had some advice you were wanting to put out there to prospective home buyers.
Yeah, you know, it's so crazy out there right now. The housing market is just blazing fast, especially in the first-time home buyer range of prices.
Oh, cool.
So it's imperative that you find out all the ins and outs. You know, how much can you afford? What's your payment range that you want to be in? What type of loan program you're qualified for? Because there's a lot of no money down loan programs that are available, but they really might not be best for you. In my experience, those loans have an increased payment that if they had a little bit of money down, they wouldn't need. But the great thing about Canby is it's eligible for the USDA loan program, which is a no money down loan. But my point is, it's just super important to get it figured out before you start looking, because I've seen customers go find the house they love, they call me and they're like, you know, let's go. Right. And then by the time we get everything dialed in, which can be in 4 hours, yeah, that house is gone.
Yeah.
And so it's just way better. So I just want to make sure that consumers know, give us a call. Just give us, you know, let's meet, let's talk about it, let's get everything dialed in so that you know exactly what you're up against, and then you're ready. You can make that offer and kaflooey, you know what I mean?
Yeah. And people can find you on your website or just give you a call?
Yeah, they can go to findtheadvantage.com or call 266-5800, obviously 503 area code. And we love to chit-chat, and we have, you know, 8 or 9 different loan officers here in the Canby office that would love to sit down with somebody and work with them.
Cool. Thanks, Derek.
Derek Hill, NMLS number 50183, Advantage Mortgage, NMLS number 177059, Equal Housing Opportunity.
Okay, so here's kind of our new spread of tools. We got our older tools here, the ones purchased from the 80s. They were great at the time, but these are heavy, very awkward. You have a gas motor that you have to run and maintain to be able to run these off their hydraulics. And sometimes it takes 2 people to hold these things to maneuver them into position just because of how heavy and awkward they are.
How much do they weigh?
Over 80 pounds, I think, for just this one here. And with the newer tools, these are in the tens of thousands of pounds. These are in the hundreds of thousands of pounds of spreading force that they have. So the amount of work that this can get done versus this is just incredible.
Not gas powered.
Right? And it's not gas powered. The best part is you take it out, you push the button, and I'm ready to go to work right now. That's it. There's nothing to set up. I could just walk over, push the button, and instantly start working. And it shuts off just as quick. So
that it didn't get that much power just like that.
Yes, the technology from the 80s to now has come a long way. So the best part about these too is they're completely portable. So those wrecks that go over embankments that are hard to get to, whereas you have a motor and a hose that you have to pack around with this heavy tool, this can go anywhere you want to take it. So it's been a huge benefit for us. And it came in the wreck we had Monday. We used all these tools, and they cut and did everything we asked it to do. They didn't stall out one time, didn't have any issues with it. And the speed of these are way faster than these old tools also.
And you were mentioning earlier that greater force is needed because cars are using stronger alloys now. They may be harder or just different to get into than they used to be because they're made to, you know, for the security of the people driving them as well.
Yes, yes. This construction, the metals are different, and the way they construct those metals too is a lot more. They'll take thinner, lighter metals to use that are easier to use, but they'll fold them on top of each other or bind them up so it actually makes them stronger and harder to cut versus your older vehicles where the initial metal is stronger, but the construction is not as strong. So these can handle that better, newer construction. So,
cool. You got anything else to show us over there?
We've got the cutters. We also use, these are rams.
Okay.
This is what we use to roll dashes off people. So if you're in a head-on wreck or one with serious front end damage, it'll actually push your dashboard down on top of you, and we'll cut apart the vehicle and wind up putting this in there to where we can push the dash off of you. So it does exactly that. You'll just push it in there and you'll push that dashboard off of them.
How many pounds of force do you get out of that
thing? It's in the hundreds.
Yeah.
I don't have all the specs memorized on these things, but it's
hundreds of thousands,
Of pounds that they do. So.
Wow.
What's that? Yeah, all electric.
Yeah. The standard electrical, is that because of just the quickness of using it, or
I think it's becoming more of a trend. There's still a lot of people that are using the hydraulics with the pump and the motor, but these have the exact same power as their twins that use a hydraulic hose and a motor and a pump.
Like, so a charging battery,
and this is just a charging battery. They last. The guy who sold it to us says you cut three cars up with this before you need to change a battery. So they actually go quite a ways. And the 32-minute extrication that we did on Monday, we didn't have to change out a single battery, and we ran the tools for the whole time. So the technology is caught up on the battery world. So people are starting to get more comfortable with moving to battery. Because initially, when these type of tools started coming out a few years back, people were kind of nervous to go to it, because, like, oh, batteries are going to fail on me when I need it the most and that kind of stuff. But it's a technology that's been proven now, so people are moving towards it. Because the ease and mobility of this, I mean, you can see how easy it is to move these around versus having to go back and get a pump and hose. Yeah, maybe. So.
Welcome to the Cayman Now Community Board, where you're in charge. That's right, this is where we share your news with our listeners. Everything from birth announcements, birthdays, and obituaries to local news and accomplishments. If you're hashtag can be proud, let's celebrate with you.
Fantastic, amazing, unbelievably talented, fun, and more fun.
The reviews are in, and they all say the same thing. You should go check out the Canby High School's spring musical while you still can. It's a little shop of horrors as you've never seen or heard before. Led by an incredibly talented cast of comedic and voice actors, music by the Canby Band, and special effects that will make you go, hey, wait a minute, are we sure that this is high school kids that put this on? We pretty much guarantee it'll be the best high school musical you've ever seen. And that includes the High School Musical, the movie. That's right, we went there. Suck it, Zac Efron. Although the show is amazing in its own right, one subplot here is that the members of the Canby High School's theater troupe are lobbying for a small portion of the new funding through the Student Success Act be funneled toward hiring a full-time theater teacher. A full-time position would allow the Canby School District to attract and retain the best talent for our young thespians, while also facilitating theater classes at Canby High School, promoting their greater diversity and participation in theater, and making it possible for CHS to gain greater recognition for its programs through theater competition. Canby High Theater students have made their appeals during public comment at several Canby School Board meetings, but, you know, a few sellout crowds at their latest production certainly wouldn't hurt. It would definitely help. So show your support for the arts and our hardworking theater students at Canby High School this weekend. Let's hashtag fill the Fine Arts Center at these last three shows, 7 p.m. Friday, March 6th, and Saturday, March 7th, with a 2 p.m. matinee on Saturday as well. Tickets are for sale at the door.
Are you interested in finding out more about climate change? If so, the Clackamas Climate Action Coalition is hosting a presentation by the Climate Reality Project at 6 p.m. March 11th at the Canby Public Library. The coalition describes themselves as a committed group of Clackamas County citizens dedicated to moving the county to a substantial future for all its people. They believe that climate change is the most overriding issue of our lives, and they need to address it head on before it's too late. they work with support and collaborate with other organizations, including 350.org, BARC, Extinction Rebellion, Our Climate, Our Children's Trust, OEC, the Sunrise Movement, and others. For more information, contact them at clackamasclimateaction@gmail.com or learn more about the Climate Reality Project at climaterealityproject.org.
The 24th Annual Canby Community Preschool Fundraising Auction is scheduled for April 18th at Willamette Valley Country Club. The theme? Uptown Hoedown. Catchy, I like it. This annual auction is attended by over 200 guests and is a fun and interactive evening, complete with an MC, an auctioneer, silent and live auctions, and a dessert dash. In the past years, the annual auction has provided approximately 40% of Canby Community Preschool's budget. It not only directly supports the preschool's operating budget, but also non-budgetary improvements and special needs, such as scholarships. CCP is a non-profit, self-supporting preschool, and their highly involved parents and staff appreciate the support the community provides each year during the event. Dinner tickets are available for purchase at canbycommunitypreschool.com/auction. Wanted, history buffs. Do you have skills for lawn, garden, and building maintenance, and the ability to work cheerfully around guests? Philip Foster Farm in Eagle Creek seeks to hire a part-time seasonal worker to maintain their historic site, flexible hours. They're also seeking volunteers ages 12 and up. Younger volunteers are welcomed with the accompaniment of a parent or guardian. You can choose your days and hours and come be a pioneer for a little while. Philip Foster Farm hosts school children and guests from all around the world for a hands-on experience of pioneer life, fostering a vibrant community of local historians of all ages. In their words, we turn kids into pioneers. For more information, contact through email at elaine@philipfosterfarm.com or call 503-637-6324.
To get your event announcement or community news on the Canby Now Community Board, email us today at info@canbynowpod.com.
Hey, Tyler. So it's February, and you know what that means. You know, there's a certain feeling in the air.
Oh, yeah. I see what you're saying.
Yeah. Tax Valentine. Time.
What? Valentine's.
No, I was saying tax day is coming up for when you file.
Oh. But it's also Valentine's, you know.
Oh, man. You know, I might need to call my wife real quick. I might be in trouble.
Okay, well, if you're looking for some place to have a fun date night, you can always try the Wild Hair Saloon, where Canby goes to eat and have fun. They've been in business for over 16 years, serve a fresh, locally sourced menu, and donate over $20,000 to Canby Sports and other causes each year. Check them out just off of Highway 99E next to Space Age in Canby, at 1656 Beaver Creek Road in Oregon City, or just go to their website, thewildhairsaloon.net.
Hey, honey, so good news, bad news. Good news, we got our taxes filed early this year.
The Canby Now podcast is produced by me, Tyler Clausen. Our content director and star reporter is Tyler Frankie. We also feature the vocal talents of Joy Struby and James Walden. So round of applause to them. The song that you're hearing right now is Canby by singer-songwriter Olivia Harms, used with her permission. Find more of her work at olivia13.com.
The Canby Now podcast is dedicated to preserving independent local journalism and redefining local news with our fun, fresh, and energetic brand of storytelling. Our sincere thanks to our local sponsors who make this show possible. Please show your appreciation by supporting the small businesses who support us.
The Canby Now podcast is a production of Now Hear This Studios, Canby's locally owned full-service audio, video, and media production company. Our mission is to produce the best content in the universe, and we'd love to help you do it. Find us online at nhtstudios.com.
I will take a motion to adjourn.
I just moved it.
I didn't even ask for it, though.